Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Elaine Cobb from Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Mike Zuzlo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Our special guest, Chad Hart, agricultural economist from Iowa State University. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Well, let's begin, as usual, with a list of things we should discuss for the day. Matt Bennett, what are you thinking should be on the top of our minds?
Well, I think this week's report from the USDA is probably something we ought to take up. Just looking at supply and demand figures and seeing if everyone feels like, not messing with the corn at all is what the USDA should have done. And then I'd just be interested to see what everyone feels like the weather is going to do to these markets moving forward, if we'll see much of a reaction if we have a lot of rain in the forecast next week, because I'm not totally sure that it is as big a deal as what it used to be, I guess, with the type of equipment we're running these days.
On your list, Elaine Cubb?
First and foremost in my mind is this flooding in Argentina and what sort of influence that should have on the soybean prices, to say nothing of the soybean meal prices, but really how much do we feel that should carry over into our U.S. soybean futures prices.
Mike Zuzlo, do you have anything left that we should talk about?
You know, only Trump and the trade. I think that was probably one of the big things that happened this week, and see if that maybe won't give us a little bit more lift to the markets, Todd. And I also wanted to ask if Professor Hart could throw out his views on the feed and residual, and maybe that tags along with what Matt was asking about as well.
We'll let him start with that if he has nothing else to add to the list. Chad, do you have anything for the list?
Well, I'll add to the list. I'll just throw on the dollar. And it's something that President Trump brought up yesterday, in fact, talking about the strength we've had in the dollar and basically saying it was too high, trying to, if you will, talk it down a little bit and open up those export markets a little more for us. So I think we've got a few things, if you will, trying to push prices higher here. We got a few more things trying to push prices lower. Always makes for a fun week.
Well, Chad, why don't you go through the USDA numbers for me as they were released this week, supply and demand for WASD that came out on Tuesday.
Well, and as of the odds, we look at, what this report did. It basically, on the supply side, no, we're not moving from our final numbers. So we were looking at, nearly 17 billion bushels of corn to work through with the 2016 crop. Demand was estimated at 14.6 billion bushels, with feed demand up there at 5.5 billion. We were looking at ethanol at 5.45 billion, food, seed, and other usage at around just under 1.5 billion, and then exports weighing in at 2.225 billion. And so when I look at these numbers, what we're seeing here year over year is fairly strong buildup on the feed and residual side. Another good buildup as we look at ethanol, slight movement up on the food and seed, and then a fairly significant move up on the export year to year. And so, the general picture, when we look at it long term, is showing stronger demand sort of across the board when we're looking for corn. But then as we look forward, I'm playing off of actually USDA's numbers that they put out at the Ag Outlook Forum for 2017, as they show that demand slowing down as we're going forward into the next marketing year. And so, if you was trying to figure out how to balance out, we've got great demand right now, but we've got these massive supplies that we've been working with now for not only this year, but the past several years. And, as I'm looking here, feed and residual probably the biggest thing to me is watching, if you will, the residual part of this. We know that feed demand should be building with the expansions we've seen in the livestock industries. But we also know that in this case, that residual tends to hide a lot of harvest and storage losses, which tend to grow bigger when you have a massive crop like we had this fall.
Oh, that's an interesting side, because normally I would think, most people would think that the feed usage might be the one that changes a lot, and that the USDA doesn't quite get that right until we get to the end of the year. And even then, sometimes it seems a bit off. How much do you think in terms of bushels might there be a likelihood of change or loss that could take place in the residual side?
Well, that's the deal. When I'm looking here, I'm probably talking about the possibility of a couple hundred million bushel swings in there, just looking at the residual. And it's something that over the past, say, 6 to 9 months, USDA has even brought up in their own commentary as they've discussed the feed and residual category, that, you know, when they're estimating here, they are factoring in a fair amount of that harvest and storage losses, given the biggest crop we've ever seen, you know, harvested last fall, and how that's part of why when they're looking forward into 2017 that they have a reduction in the feed and residual category. They're not necessarily pointing to a reduction in feed usage overall, but they're pointing to that reduction in that residual component.
Matt Bennett, you were wondering whether the USDA numbers ending stocks for corn left unchanged was the right thing to do. Do you have a different opinion?
Well, I agree with a lot of what he's saying. I think it was interesting to me to see, you know, the ethanol go up just a little bit again, which I think people have kind of been clamoring to see that yet with the EIA numbers, you know, last week. And then again this week, we saw the lowest numbers we'd seen in the calendar year. So, you know, it looks like ethanol plants are creeping back into profit margins. But I think most people have felt like, you know, your corn usage for ethanol would be backing off as the marketing year went on somewhat. So, you know, I guess I'm hopeful that we keep our exports intact. I do know South Americans will, you know, obviously bring a fairly large crop to town. I think it'd be very interesting to see if, you know, the safrinha crop gets the kind of weather that they're hoping for here in the next month, because it's quite important. But bottom line, they're going to have a big crop either way.
This all brings me to Washington, D.C., and the Trump administration, Mike Zuzulo, Donald Trump, as Chad Hart alluded to, talking about the U.S. dollar. Presidents don't normally do this, but said the dollar was just too high, and he wanted to put some pressure on that. What do you think about it and trade?
I think the biggest thing we're seeing right now, Todd, that could be maybe one of the biggest factors for a higher lift in prices, in other words, corn goes 30 to 50 cents higher than what we expect right now, is the issue that Trump, when he was elected, was expected by the market, and I think the USDA, and we've talked about this before, to promote a strong dollar, and the Fed expectations also with the idea of tightening, that they would tighten too quickly and that they would have to tighten faster and more aggressively because of Trump's policy. And so between the Federal Reserve and President Trump, the market has had this idea that the dollar is going to go up for maybe as many as 2 years. And even USDA said they expected a strong dollar all the way through 2017 into 2018, as late as their Agricultural Outlook Forum. And I think that this is a big issue, and I think this is going to support commodities overall. And I think it maybe will come back around where what we've talked about so far has been the demand for corn, primarily that corn demand is looked at as more favorable. Right now, it's all about supply. Right now, it's all about weather. And I guess the only thing I'd tie in with Professor Hart was the thing that bothers me, and today's feed outlook came out for the month of April by USDA, and they once again write, as with last month's forecast, higher corn for ethanol contributed to reduction in feed and residual. If I had somebody's ear in Washington at USDA, why don't we just split out those two categories? Why don't we have a residual category and why don't we have a feed category? Because we are having real difficulty with this category year after year. And even U of I did a special study back in 2013 saying that, you know, between 2006 and 13, each month that we had, or each grain stocks report we had, the residual use and feed use combined moved 500 million bushels each quarter. And yet, before that time period, going back to 1999, the maximum amount of feed and residual shift was 275 million bushels for any quarter. So we've essentially doubled the range, and statistically, it's just not as good of a variable, in my opinion, for forecasting what the actual demand is. And when you talk about what Professor Hart's talking about, I think I could make an argument on the livestock side that given the beef and turkey production increase again this month versus last month, you could have 100 million more bushels in feed and residual, and you could have 400 million more bushels in corn exports. So you could have 500 million more bushels of demand than what we're talking about right now for 16-17.
I suspect, Chad, that you have taken a look at these numbers, the feed and residual numbers. Do we have enough data that comes in to do a couple of things, separate both the feed and the residual out? I don't know whether we have enough on the feed side. They obviously, USDA, have pointed to ethanol and said, look, there's an awful lot of DDGs coming out of that, and that's been putting pressure on how much feed actually being corn is being used as feed. Can we actually get some numbers that would work better than what you think we're seeing from USDA?
Well, that's the deal. I think USDA is looking into can they create better numbers there. I think the challenge right now, as you mentioned, is that right now they don't have the confidence to be able to split those apart. When we're looking at the feed side and the residual side, those are the two components where we don't have good, clear measurements that we can take. With ethanol, we can refer to the EIA numbers and look at, you know, biofuel production and be able to back through what sort of grain is needed to do that. We can do the same thing weekly with the export side. And so since we can't measure feed and these harvest and storage losses that well, they do get lumped together. We can try to tear them apart, but right now I don't think USDA has the confidence in those separate numbers that they're willing to post them. And as you mentioned, especially here on the feed side with the, let's call it the maturation of the ethanol industry, we're dealing with massive quantities of feed pumping through that ethanol line as well. Especially as distillers' grains have backed up on the market, that also, you know, brings this idea of, okay, you know, even if the feed number does not move, that doesn't mean feed stocks haven't moved. It's just that instead of being raw corn, we've got to now take into account those distillers' grains, the wet gluten meal, the other co-products that we're getting out of the biofuel industry.
Yeah, I want to switch gears and talk about soybeans just a bit. They had an awful good week in Chicago at the CME Group. The markets are closed, so we've finished the week out. No markets on Friday of this week. Won't reopen until the Monday trade. And there's been flooding in Argentina. A couple good rallies over this past week. And I suspect you have some thoughts about what's been happening there, despite the really large supply of beans that USDA says is on hand, not only here in the United States, but on the global side, and a great big number that they produced for Brazil on the USDA WASDE reports this week.
Yeah, wasn't that an interesting philosophical question on Tuesday? Should a futures market react more to a USDA projection about supply in Brazil at 111 million metric tons, that's good, or should it react more to the ongoing weather concerns in Argentina with the flooding? The timing of that was very interesting, and I'm not saying that USDA should know or be able to predict the future and have changed their Argentina projection necessarily, but the futures market, I would have expected it to rally more on Tuesday rather than to fall by a couple of cents on the day of that WASDE report. And I think part of it is just we're never going to get a pure, uncomplicated bullish reaction to wet weather towards a crop ever. Even if you have one flooded field, it's going to be surrounded on four sides by four fields that will benefit, their yields will benefit from the excess moisture. And that's a terrible thing to say to farmers that are experiencing flooded fields, but that's the reality of how futures market react to flooding. So I was surprised that soybeans did not have more of a bullish reaction this week, but they have obviously bumped up a bit.
What do you think about trade Trump and his thoughts on the U.S. dollar, Elaine?
Well, I think we could argue that the dollar where it is, the dollar index where it is at 100 points or above is strong. So, you know, he was probably correct that it is strong, but I don't think that fundamentally it would need to fall. I mean, and I think that the trade here on Thursday did mostly correct most of its movement on Wednesday to reflect that. I mean, I think the larger story, as Mike has already pointed out, is that we're looking more at the interest rate rises and the general health of the economy. So as long as the dollar stays, you know, more or less sideways as it is, rather than developing a longer term trend, I think, yeah, we're looking at the strength of the economy generally supporting the idea that consumers globally are buying raw materials. That's good for commodity prices generally.
Matt Bennett, do you think that the marketplace overreacted to wet weather in the United States, or potential for wet weather in the United States, given we're only on the 13th day of April?
I think to an extent, you know, people seem to have gotten maybe a little bit more excited about it than what I would think that maybe is necessary. I guess maybe part of the reason that you're seeing that is because already, you know, folks are just a little bit concerned with total corn acreage, considering the initial number, you know, was just a shade under 90. And so I think people have a heightened sense to what if we end up holding on to some sort of a wet weather trend. You know, I mean, here I am in central Illinois, and it kind of depends on where you're at, because some folks are still sitting. But, you know, I talked to a couple of people this morning that said if they could get three good days in between today, Friday, and Saturday, they'd have all their corn planted. So, you know, it just does not take very long to get a whole bunch of acres in the ground. I feel for some of the producers that may have to sit and wait just a little bit longer, but it is early in the grand scheme of things. So I guess my personal opinion is any reaction of a bullish nature, while it's nice for all of us producers, it's probably a little bit early for that, I guess, in my opinion.
Is there a way that they should be taking advantage of this price rally in that case?
Well, you know, if they hadn't sold anything yet, you know, and they were looking, you know, I did have producers that felt like, well, I can't really make a whole lot of money sub spring insurance prices, you know, and I think that there's a lot of that out there, especially we can't count on having bumper crop every year. And so I don't know that there's near the sense of urgency maybe to worry about pricing a whole lot of corn early on. I guess I probably agree with Mike. I do think that there is a chance for these markets, especially corn, whenever I look at, you know, if we end up having the acreage that we had on the planting intentions or less. You know, I do think that the market's going to be highly sensitive to any sort of summer weather. So, you know, I don't have any problem with a person getting the 10% or so whenever they get up around $4 in that neighborhood. But I certainly am not that excited about pricing a whole lot more corn than that at this point.
Matt, I've got you thinking about thinking like a farmer, but I want you to think more about what you've got left in the bin to sell on the old crop. And by thinking like a farmer, you're thinking that you'll be in the field, but if it rains and prices are going up, you might be able to move corn. Would you do that?
You know, I think, you know, we've talked to a lot of our producers about that. You know, one thing that we've said for quite some time is we saw absolutely no reason that we would have any corn in commercial storage and be paying for it. Now, if a guy was able to get a free DP, you know, obviously I don't have any problem sitting and waiting on that. But as far as moving corn on any strength, you know, we've told our producers, you know, set your goals, go ahead and move out of some of this cash if you want. Do it before you get the rally. But in my opinion, you know, I'm going to set some goals in place, and I'm still going to hold on to ownership of old corn to an extent. I don't think, you know, in my opinion, I want to get out of ownership of corn. I think it's a good it's good property to own. And I think that moving forward, you know, buying a September bull call spread, you know, for the price of storage, I think makes really good sense. Worst case scenario is you do the same thing you would have done if you were paying for storage. Best case scenario is you get something out of a summer weather market and you can see a big jump.
Chad, what did you learn from the grain stocks report about on and off farm supplies in Iowa? And is that different than in previous history?
You did see some changes there. You know, when we're looking overall here, you know, again, what we found was a lot of crop out there, you know, in the, you know, both, you know, on farm and off farm storage. And so, you know, as we're looking here right now, what I noticed, especially as we look at the difference here in state, is that we saw a lot more storage, in this case, keeping it on farm, and less as we looked off farm. So getting back to point, a couple of the analysts have made, the idea is that, you know, what farmers have done here is they're not necessarily using as much of that commercial storage as they did before. They're wanting more of it relatively on the farm.
Is this because they have built bins, and do they use them much more like commercial storage, or are they still selling as if they were farmers, in your opinion?
Well, you're seeing a bit of both. I mean, we didn't see as much storage building over the past year, but what we have seen over the past decade is a fairly strong move to build some bins on farm and to have a farmer be more like the elevator. They're building up that storage capacity and willing to take advantage of it if they see an opportunity to do so.
Okay, I've got a question for all of you at this point. Last week on Commodity Week, we probably had the most bearish Commodity Week of the winter months, and it was truly a very bearish Commodity Week. Some of that has to do with the personalities that were on board with us. Other, I think, was taking a look at just how much crop was out there. Should we be that bearish this week, or have we put a bottom in the marketplace? Mike Zuzulo, what do you think?
I don't think we've put a bottom in, Todd. I don't think that the soybeans will allow it for right now. I think this is where the beans, and I still haven't seen the wheat come around to perform where it needs to be in terms of bringing back the commodity index buying and get the managed money net shorts out of the way. In other words, cover those short positions. But there's several factors right now that make me feel like, other than the geopolitical situation that is actually helping us some right now, it's still so volatile and uncertain. I think you still want to hedge profit. I'm like Matt with the corn. I like the upside potential in corn, but it doesn't mean I don't use hedges and get some protection in place because the costs are too high. This year is just as bad potentially as last year, as far as if we don't get certain prices and lock them in, what will it mean to our farming operation for next year? We can't forget that. So China's meal stocks, they're at a 9-month high. The crush margins in some of the key provinces of China are very deep in the red. They're at levels not seen since 2013, 2014. Hog margins in Shandong province, which is a major hog producing province, is at 5-month lows. And the pork retail price average for the rump in 50 major cities is at a 14-month low. You stack that up against the fact that the Brazilian farmer has got sales in place at the lowest level since 2009, 2010. I think you still want to be a hedger in these markets.
Elaine Cubb, your thoughts?
Well, I wonder if the most bearish commodity week in all winter is like the shoeshine boy telling you to buy stocks right at the top of a bubble. You know, if everybody is bearish, if the entire market is reflecting the bearish opinions of all the speculators that have come in here with the short positions, and they've all come in there, is this now the time that it turns around? And I don't want to be the one that says, oh, the markets can't go down farther, because they can, and risk protection should still be in place, to Mike's point. But it does feel like that so much bearishness has been known. All we really need is some sort of spark to get some short covering in there, and things could pop quite quickly. Like I said, I'm surprised that the Argentinian flooding wasn't that spark for soybeans, but it kind of was in soybean meal, so maybe we're just at the start of it. I would tend to be looking for higher prices, yes.
Yeah, and they're expected to get more rainfall. It's not going to stop there yet, so I'm wondering how much of an impact you suppose might have taken place already, Elaine, and what's the possibility? Last year, it was a fairly sizable impact.
Yeah, it did. Well, I don't know if it was just a coincidence, but it was definitely the timing of when the soybean rally started was right when they had that flooding. So I've seen some estimates that they've lost 5 million acres, which would be 10% of what they planted, and that's probably overstated. But the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange today said 2.5 million acres, so that's 5% of their production, which is almost 1% of global production. So that's nothing to sneeze at.
Matt Bennett, your thoughts on whether the most bearish commodity week or not needs to be discounted in some way?
Well, I hate to discount anybody. I think I'm probably maybe a little bit of a blend of both Mike and Elaine. I think, you know, in my opinion, I'm kind of like Mike whenever he was talking earlier about we need to look for opportunities to hedge, even though I'm not necessarily overly bearish corn. You know, we've been telling producers, if you can get in a position where you can, you know, straight up hedge a few bushels and then cover that hedge, it's not a bad place to be, you know, just in case this market falls apart. I feel fairly good about the corn market overall. I think when I look at the soybean market, you know, I hope that Elaine is right and that we get, you know, we get the Argentina weather to give us the boost that we need. I think as a producer, we've been trying to encourage folks to take a long, hard look at what these prices mean to their bottom line, because if you do get a rally back into the, let's say we're even within a quarter of 10 bucks, I think that a producer needs to take a pretty close look at something like that, because most of the guys that I've talked to, you know, whenever we dipped below 950, producers are sitting here wondering, hey, did I miss the boat on this bean market? You know, people were pretty concerned about it, even though they still, most producers we work with, basis of board at 950 could actually turn a profit. So, you know, I think that if I do get some sort of a bump out of this market, I'm probably going to be looking to do something with it. But I can't say that I'm overly friendly to the bean market. And I do have a little more confidence in the corn market at this point, when the focus seems to be shifting towards the U.S. production. And I think all eyes are going to be looking closely to see what kind of total acreage we get, because I do think part of the reason maybe I'm just a little bit bearish soybeans is because there is the chance, the potential that we could plant 90 million acres of beans or better, and that certainly isn't going to do a whole lot to help alleviate the burdensome world stock situation.
Chad Hart, your stance on both crops?
Well, I got to admit, as I look here, I put it this way, I wasn't surprised that last week's was probably the most bearish you'd heard, and I'm not surprised that we're trying to figure out, is this the bottom or not? I'm eerily reminded of last year, where we sort of went through this at about this same time, and this is when we started to see both crops be able to pull it out based upon sort of a combination of, you know, very strong demand at the time and just enough weather problems to help create that idea that supplies would shrink down a bit here. And we've got some of those same storylines, I think, as both, you know, as Mike, Matt, and Elaine have all worked through here. Corn, you know, if you will, we're able to go a little bit more with the grain here, and we've got more positive storylines to be able to tell there, and the markets have reflected that, especially over March and early April. Sort of, if, you know, corn got to tread water while soybeans worked its way down, just because there is so much global supply, especially as we look at that Brazilian crop. You know, as Elaine talked about, the Argentine crop may be disappearing. It seemed like the Brazilian crop kept growing by just enough to offset the storyline in Argentina.
Let's wrap up our discussion for the afternoon. I think, Mike Zuzulo, I'll start with a final word from you.
I think with the Trump situation, Todd, and the grain stocks report, and then this latest WASDE report, I think it might be wise, and I'm recommending to the producers I work with, to think about selling on paper in the corn market, holding pat in the cash market, with the idea that the demand is better, the weather could help us in terms of cash basis. And I would probably flip that around and turn it exactly upside down when it comes to the soybeans, be more aggressive on the cash related sales and soybeans, and then be ready to defend on paper as you get into that June, July time period, once we get a better feel for the acreage numbers. Happy Easter, by the way.
Elaine Cubb?
Also wish your listeners a happy Easter. And I think as far as getting a sense of where the overall commodity markets are going to go, I'm going to keep my eye on the rally in crude oil, which is trading above $53 a barrel. And if those inventories keep going down and that market can keep churning higher and sort of lead the rest of the commodities higher, I'm going to maintain my cautiously bullish opinion on these markets.
Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I think I'm probably a little bit more friendly. As I said, as far as corn goes, I think producers need to be very, you know, very aware of where their bottom lines are this year and be pretty aggressive whenever they have a chance to latch on to some profit. I think whenever it comes to corn, I'm probably going to be looking to do some stuff on paper similar to Mike whenever we get in that $4 and above range. I think with soybeans, we've been awfully aggressive already. Producers that are calling me now that have said, you know, we feel like we missed the boat, we're telling them, hey, in this next, if we get another 20 to 25 cents on this bean market, we want to get pretty aggressive on soybeans as well. So I sure hope everyone has a happy Easter, and that's pretty much where I stand.
And finally, Chad Hart from Iowa State.
Well, I will wish everybody a happy Easter as well. As I say, as I'm looking at this, one of the big things I'm going to be watching over the next, say, few weeks is not only the planting progress, but I'm going to watch those export sales reports. You know, typically it's this time of year when we start to see those numbers slide down as South America comes online. If I'm looking for a rally similar to last year, we're going to need to hold these export sales up a bit here. And so these next couple of weeks will be crucial to telling us how much we can hang on to those international markets here at a contra-seasonal time.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Our panelists this week have included Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Elaine Cubb from Mastering the Grain Markets in Elkhorn, Nebraska, Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and Chad Hart, Agricultural Economist at Iowa State University. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.